Very good afternoon to all brothers and sisters in the Dhamma. Today is the, is it 15 of August 2021, a Sunday. We will be continuing from this book, the sharing from this book, the Cultivating the Bodhisattva Way. We are at page 113, we'll continue from there. C7, Miscellaneous Announcement, Chapter 3C7. This is the section on Miscellaneous Announcement by Sister Padmasri. So, Sister Padmasri take over and address all those who were having their Bodhisattva vow that day. So Sister Padmasri said, "Dear brothers and sisters in the Dhamma, congratulations to everyone, newborn, and happy birthday. We shall call upon Brother Song to present a garland to our beloved teacher, Brother Teo, to express our gratitude and respect." This is after the taking of the Bodhisattva vows. Then I mentioned, but Teo also said, yeah, she is right in the sense that you all are newborn, embryonic bodhisattva. The first stage of bodhi mind development, that is to aspire to be bodhisattva, to walk this way with faith, sincerity, and understanding, you have done. That's why you are already qualified. So you are the first batch or initial Bodhisattva. Then my nature rejoiced. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Then I said, there is one more thing that I need to remind you all regarding the Bodhisattva vows and aspiration that you all have taken. You all have only planted the seed of Bodhi today, and to enable it to take root and become firmly established, you all must nurture it. We are renewing this vow and aspiration with great sincerity and faith on a daily basis for the next 3 to 6 months. This is to stabilize it. You must read through the notes, the yellow card, if possible, every day to remind yourself your determination or determine deeply that these are the important right views and right understanding and right aspiration that you want to have life after life whenever you arise. This itself can help you go very far. This life itself, you must determine sincerely and make it very clear until it is strongly established. Until later on, even without these notes, you will be able to recite them all, recall them, until they become a part of you. If this life also you cannot recall these vows and aspiration, then do you think it will happen in the future? Not likely, unless you have the vows and aspiration firmly established to give rise to the causes and conditions for you to recall them the moment you come into contact with the Buddha Dhamma and the Sangha in the future. Chances are it will not manifest or take root. So this renewal, constant renewal to establish the Bodhi mind, to nurture it, to arise the causes and conditions so that it become very, very strong and very firm. Then in future, on its own, it will arise. Because of your faith, your sincerity, and your determination, your vows, and your understanding. So all this is going to help you a long way if you do it during this sasana, where you have the parami and the condition, and you have the understanding. So these are very important understanding. But before you can encounter all this, you must develop the strong vows and aspiration with great faith and understanding life after life, for it to have the condition to arise or happen. Like my dislike, when I come, my nature straight away understand, because since young it already started to search, that it only need to encounter the real Dhamma in whatever form or manner, either in a book form or via somebody's words or speech, just like the sixth patriarch, Master Hui Ning. The moment he heard the Diamond Sutra's words on the mind must have no dwelling, his nature arose and straight away he connect, understood and awakened. For this other understanding that he had earlier on vowed to have, life after life whenever he arises. So when you do the same, your nature will also move, because your karmic nature and your spiritual nature will take you along, and similar condition can also manifest. Then when the time comes, the teacher will come, the guide will come, and all these books will also come. Later on, living beings that have affinity with your nature, they will also come to you. You can ask around, apart from my university schoolmates or classmates and my wife, I don't know the rest of you. How did all of you come? It's through your affinity and your own other conditions. As you go into the cultivation, you will develop all this understanding. Initially, don't worry. Just be patient and take your time to learn all this. But you must have faith, sincerity, and perseverance. Then all this will fall into place. You don't need to be a very special being to have all this possibility. Every Bodhisattva also started from somewhere in the distant past. My spiritual nature also started from basic, like most of you who don't have anything. It started from the first Bodhi seed that is being planted. So when you plant the seed of Bodhi to aspire to walk this way sincerely with the faith, that is how it all started. Then after that, the cultivation just falls into place because of the vow and the aspiration. All this will become easier when you know how to develop the aspiration and the vow to break all the coming obstruction, to bring about causes and conditions for all the great beings' nature to help you, protect you, and bless you, to help you arise the causes and conditions to avoid the foolish, the heedless, and meet up only with the wise and enlightened ones. That you must cultivate on your path to understand who are the heedless, so that you can avoid them and recognize who are the wise ones, so that you know how to benefit from them and develop affinity with them. Then likewise, when you cultivate, you must understand what constitutes evil. Then only can you develop the mindfulness to avoid all evil. Then you must train your mind to be heedful, to be ever mindful, so that this cultivation can flow easily. With this, I will end my sharing for today, and we better do the sharing of merits, transform merits, etc. before we end. So this is our usual closing puja. I just read through so that you all understand, because of the MCO and the EMCO. We cannot gather, that's why we seldom do this. We only chant. But now, since we are going through this book, I will explain the English translation to those who may not understand Pali. Sharing our merits with all beings, starting with the devas. Sharing our merits with the deva. When we chant, Akasata Chia Pumata Devanaga Mahindika Punyang Tang Anumoditwa Chirang Rakantu Loka Sasana. The meaning is, may all beings inhabiting space and earth, devas and nagas of mighty power, share these merits, and may they long protect the sasana or dispensation. So this is a very good act of sharing. That's why the devas, the Dhamma protector, the nagas of mighty power, when they receive all these merits and sharing, they will protect you where you are part of the sasana. Then we chant, Itta Vata Chamehi Sampadan Punya Sampadan Sabbe Deva Anumodantu Sabba Sampati Siddhya. The meaning is, may all beings share this merits which we have thus acquired, and may all devas rejoice. May it contribute greatly to their well-being and happiness. So when you chant this, share this, and make this aspiration, wish them well-being and happiness, they will in turn rejoice and also protect you. Then transfer merits to departed one. This one is very important. There are certain beings that are born in the Peta line, or they call it the Hungry Ghost line. And this Peta line, their world is not like the human world, where you can work for a salary, or you can go and work in the farm, in the field, plow, and do trades, merchandising. In their realm, they don't have anything. There is nothing for you to earn a living. That's why they cannot receive merits. They have to suffer down there. And these are the beings who actually depend on the merits transferred by their departed ones for them to rejoice, to come out of that rhyme. That's why we will share this. This is advised by the Buddha during his time. He said, let these merits accrue to departed relative and those who can receive them, and may they too be well and happy, well and happy, well and happy. So you chant this three times if they have any relationship with you. Chances are they will receive the merits and they can actually make use of it. And when they make use of it, it can actually help them in a great way. Sometimes they straight away manifest rebirth into Deva rhymes or happier rhyme. In the Buddha's time, you can read the Jataka story, how it happened. So the moment the king transfer merit as per advice of the Buddha, river, that merit is very special. They make offering to the Sangha, the Aryan Sangha of Sakyamuni Buddha. So when they transfer merit, idang mena tinang hotu sukita hontu nyato, the Buddha enable the king to see what happened. Then he witnessed how the Peta, this category of Peta, so what they call that rhyme of being, they transform, benefited from that sharing of merits. Then the third one is to make aspiration for us to avoid the foolish and the heedless, meet out with the wise, so the enlightenment in the here and the now can be realized soon as possible. So we will chant, Ipmina punyang kamina, mame bala samagamo, satang samagamo hotu, ya wa nivana patiya. So the English translation is, by the grace of this merits that we have acquired, may we never follow the foolish and the heedless, but only the wise and the enlightened one, up to the time I attain final liberation, Nibbana. Then we rejoice. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Then I mentioned, let us pay respect mindfully to Lord Buddha and all the worthy ones. Then we end. So we finish the third part of the sharing. We will continue with section D, the fourth part of the sharing. Walking the Bodhisattva way and the taking of the vow, the fourth sharing. So this is the last sharing for the compilation of this book. So this section is based on the direct transcript of the recorded Dhamma session by me dated 28 September 2016. We started in January 2015, so it's almost 1 year, 9 months for us to cover all the four sections. And it's like meant to be. Yeah, after that, Kayamita volunteered to do a transcript of all this, taking out the Bodhisattva vow, cultivating the Bodhisattva vow, sharing. Then when the transcript came out, I realized I can compile them into a book. That's how this book come about. And it so happened, all the sharing is so like in-depth. And it is very comprehensive to allow people to have the understanding of what this Bodhisattva way is and how to actually cultivate it and do it. And this one is like meant to be. The teaching wants to arise. That's how causes and conditions arise and all this fall into place. So now we go to the fourth sharing, introduction, or the initial briefing, D1. I started by sharing a very good evening to all brothers and sisters in the Dhamma. Today is the 28th of September 2016 and is an auspicious day for some of our Kayamita who had requested for new opportunity for them to take the Bodhisattva vow. This one includes some who didn't take when the earlier session were conducted. This occasion can also be an opportunity for those who have taken the vows before to reaffirm their vows. This vow can be of great benefit to you when you understand their great significance. And when you take it with understanding, your faith will also become very different. It can bring forth the transformation in you because these are very unique vows. When I go through them with you afterwards, you will understand their great significance. They are taken based on an in-depth, clear understanding of the Buddha's Dhamma or teaching. And these are the important right views that you must have every time when you come to this universe, regardless of whether you have to come or you choose to come. Either way, you must have this understanding, otherwise you will be afflicted because of your delusion. That's the reason why we have to make this firm affirmation or determination with understanding. With very strong faith or sadha leading to the virya and the mindfulness. After you have taken it, you should continuously reflect on it, contemplate on it, and develop their clear understanding. Means clear understanding of all this affirmation and vows. Then on your own, while at home, initially on a daily basis, you must reflect, contemplate, determine in front of your own altar to reaffirm all these vows for at least 3 months. After that, you can every week or once a week, you should continue to reaffirm them until it has become a part of you, until it has become very stable within your understanding. After that, you can keep doing it for a while. Then every 3 months, you can go back and look at the vows again and reaffirm them to strengthen your faith and understanding. That way you can do it without having to refer to the yellow card or the notes to guide you, meaning it has become a part of your understanding. Then you will become very different and your cultivation will become very different too. Afterwards, when I go through all this with you all, you will you all understand better. Okay, then we start the special puja. So D2 is special puja offering and chanting. So special puja offerings and chanting followed by chanting of the Heart Sutta, Great Compassionate Mantra and Mahakaruna Dharani Sutta as before, follow our chanting book. So this one lasts for about 40 minutes, which is very wholesome and very beautiful. Especially after the offering, the special puja, and after all the salutation, then we start chanting the Heart Sutta. Then after that, the Great Compassionate Mantra, Ta Pei Chong. Then the Maha Karuna Dharani Sutta. So we chant it, I think, 3 times each, if I'm not wrong. And it was very wholesome. This one creates affinity with Kuan Yin, Bodhisattvas, with all the great beings. And it strengthened our faith. And it developed a lot of virtue in our cultivation understanding. Especially the Heart Sutta reminds us of the very, very penetrative Dhamma, the two aspects, the mundane and the supramundane, and the pinnacle of wisdom. That's why it's called Prajna Paramita Sutta. Prajna is wisdom, perfection of wisdom, Sutta. Then the Great Compassionate Mantra is to invoke the name of all the manifestation of Kuan Yin, the 84 manifestation that she took when she came to the existential world. And these are the manifestation that she did a lot of very wholesome, great loving kindness and compassion. And he has helped a lot of people. And when you combine all this chanting of all the manifestations name, they become a mantra. They call it the Great Compassionate Mantra. That's how it has its efficacy and power. So this Great Compassionate Mantra is a very powerful mantra, and it can liberate and help many, many living beings, suffering beings. Then of course, finally, is the Great Karuna, Great Compassionate Dharani Sutta, which we also chant. Okay, then after that, we go to the third part, the taking of the Bodhisattva vows, D3. Okay, since we have finished the chanting, we can now commence our official taking of the Bodhisattva vow ceremony. Today is a very auspicious day, because some Kayamita have requested for this special Bodhisattva vow ceremony to be held one more time. At first I told them you can do it at home in front of your own altar, but they prefer to do it with my nature and have requested that I lead them to do it again. As before, we would like to invite all the great beings, the Buddhas and all the Bodhisattvas and Devas who are here, to bear witness while we all take and reaffirm all these Bodhisattva vows. These Bodhisattva vows that we are going to take are very unique. So because of that, very likely most of you must have great parami from the past for you to have the condition to be here to partake this ceremony. These vows are also closely related to Dhamma cultivation, and they will help you in many ways for walking the Bodhisattva way to perfect all the Dhamma practices, and also to fulfill whatever perfection needed to realize Sammasambuddhahood that you have aspired for. As you walk this way, you are actually cultivating the perfection of wisdom, understanding, following the Buddha's way. And it has a lot to do with his Diamond Sutra teaching of no mark, between no mark of a self, cultivating no mark of living beings, and no mark of any Dhamma or life. all this understanding for Shai Kong, then what you need to include into this Bodhisattva vow are some of the essential right views that Sakyamuni Buddha had taught us, and I will read through them so that it can help you develop the faith. After that, we will officially take the vow, the Bodhisattva vow, together. I will lead you, but for now, I will just read through it so that you can have the better understanding of what these vows are. You will be given a copy of the printed notes. Now we have the yellow card for your safekeeping and future reference. I will read to you the notes so that later on, when you take the actual vow, you can follow them more easily. Anybody doesn't have a copy of these notes? Okay, good. Please turn to the first page, which is a general introduction to the taking of the Bodhisattva vow. The Bodhisattva vows are the vows taken by Mahayana Buddhists to attain complete enlightenment for the sake of all sentient beings. One who has taken the vows is normally known as a Bodhisattva. The Patimokkha, or the monk's precept, which the monks take, they may cease at death, whereas the Bodhisattva vow extends into future life. There are basically two traditions of the Bodhisattva vow, one originating from Asanga and the other from Nagarjuna, Longsu Posa. A Bodhisattva vow is found at the end of the Avatamsaka Sutra of Samantabhadra Bodhisattva, and he explained that these vows are to be taken with the two famous verses from the sutra. Note, Samantabhadra Bodhisattva is also known as Pusien Pusa. About 2 years ago, I led a group of Kayamita on a very special spiritual trip to Ameisan, the way place for Pusien Pusa. That trip was indeed very meaningful, memorable, and most beautiful, because everything went on very smoothly and it was as if it's meant to be. When the faith developed, wholesomeness, joy, and understanding will keep on unfolding. Quite a number of Kayamita who went and also had a lot of affinity with Pusien Bodhisattva's nature. And because of that, they had a lot of very good encounters and experiences while there. About 4 or 5 Kayamita who had very good affinity with Pusien Pusa, they really progressed very fast after that special spiritual trip. That is the reason why while on all these spiritual trips organized by me, if you have the faith and the understanding, a lot of things can happen and manifest on its own. That's also the reason why, not long after that, I think you all know what happened to Brother Song, right? He was up there too, remember? The tears just flowed from his face and he was sobbing and crying out very loud. Mr. Our local guide who took us there, he didn't understand what happened, so he came and talked to me. He said, "Brother Teo, don't you think Brother Song got some serious problem? Why is he crying and sobbing like that?" I said, "Don't worry. This one has something to do with his past affinity with Pusien Pusa and also his past encounter and practices. That's why after that a lot of things happened to Brother Song. And then later on, he actually developed the understanding and he progressed very fast. Okay, now we will continue with the taking of the vows. The two famous verses from the Avatamsaka Sutta are, just as all the previous Sugatas, the Buddha generate the Bodhimaya of enlightenment and accomplish all stages of Bodhisattva training, so will I, for the sake of living beings, generate the Bodhimaya of enlightenment and accomplish all the stages of Bodhisattva training. Generating the Bodhimaya is very important, because in order to walk this way, you have to sincerely generate the Bodhimaya. The meaning in Mandarin is very good and much clearer. you develop the bodhisattva vow and the bodhisattva resolve to arise the bohiman, which the Mahayana call Bodhi Singh in Mandarin. Bodhi is Bodhi, and the meaning is enlightenment. And Satta is the being. That's the reason why a bodhisattva is an enlightened being who vows to determine, or who vows and determine to walk this path to Buddhahood. So generating this Bodhi mind with very strong faith and understanding is very important. That's the reason why this resolve to plant this seed of Bodhi within our nature, not in our thought, not at our thought level. With the vow and the faith is very important. The Bodhi mind is the mind that can understand the Buddha Dhamma needed to develop the awakening and enlightenment and the perfection, etc. So this resolve to arise the Bodhi mind or the Bodhi Singh is extremely important. That's the reason why to be a Bodhisattva or a Pusa, you must have this Bodhi Singh or Bodhi mind. Because this is the seed of Bodhi that can bring forth the enlightenment. And from this seed, it can generate the causes and conditions for you to walk this path until all the stages of Bodhi mind development and Bodhisattva way cultivation are completed and perfected. That's the reason why the next paragraph reads, the promise to keep Bodhisattva vows apply not only to this life, but to each subsequent lifetime until full enlightenment. Thus, this vow continue on our mind stream into our nature and into our future lives. So this is a very different cultivation. This is something very different. This one can drive you, can allow you to continue to develop this Bodhi mind so that life after life when you come, you will have this understanding, you will have this resolve that will drive you to develop the perfection. And not only that, this Bodhisattva vow can also bring forth a lot of understanding and benefits too. And through this vow, you can perfect your 10 perfection relatively easy. Yeah, this vow actually does the work for you. You will also come to understand what aspiration or adhittana is. It is also one of the 10 perfection. While you have this understanding, you will have to, you will know how to continuously use it. You will know how to make use of your power of merits, wholesomeness, or whatever goodness that you have developed. You can invoke the power of merits for causes and conditions for whatever you aspire for to unfold, to perfect your vow, your cultivation, and all those are the essential, useful things. This one, when you invoke through the nature's law, their understanding, it can become very powerful. And that's the reason why the Bodhisattva vow can be very powerful. And when you understand this vow, you will have a lot of gratitude towards the Buddha and the Bodhisattvas. You will have a lot of respect towards him. Then you will develop the unshakable faith in him that he is so wise and he can actually guide you. Not only humans, but all beings. He can guide all beings, including the devas, the gods, and others. That's why he is a teacher of man and God. He is a guide incomparable. Nobody can be better than him. He is an incomparable guide as far as training living beings to become enlightened is concerned, because this ability is part of the Buddha's 9 great virtue or qualities. Now we shall read on. The next paragraph is just for your information. In the Tibetan Buddhism, there are 2 lineage of the Bodhisattva way or vows. The first is associated with Cittamatra movement of Indian Buddhism. and is said to have originated from Bodhisattva Maitreya and to have been propagated by Asanga. The second one is associated with Madhyamaka movement and is said to have originated from Bodhisattva Manjushri Vansu Pusa and to have been propagated by Nagarjuna Longsu Pusa and later on by Shantideva. The main difference between the two lineages is that in the Chittamatra lineage, the vows cannot be received by one who has not previously received the Patimokkha vows, which means you have to be a monk first. But for the other one, there is no such requirement. In taking this vow, you were joined with hundreds of thousands of Buddhists in the West and millions in Asia. Means you are not alone. There are a lot of people who take this vow. Suchi alone also had millions. So you are not alone in this journey. The world has changed and transformed so much that even within the Western world, where the people are predominantly Christian, they also have a lot of bodhisattvas. In the hundreds of thousands, as stated. So the world really has changed. Then in Asia, of course, there are millions who have done so. So even if you look at the West, the Western society, there is a lot of Westerners taking the Buddhist teaching. Some become monks too. We will now continue. As is traditional, you might seek out a Buddhist center or a temple and take the Bodhisattva vow in the presence of a teacher, which is what you all are doing now. Or if you cannot do so, you can take them at home, create a sacred space and place there the images of Bodhisattvas or Buddha who had gone forth before you. If you wish to invite friends or friends to be your witness, you can just sit quietly for a while and reflect on the beauty and value of a life dedicated to benefit all living beings. When you are ready, at any meaningful ritual, like the lighting of a candle, the offering of puja, flowers, etc., and the taking of refuge, etc., then recite your vow. Note, just now we have done a complete pre-puja, which is very meaningful. Then we have also done the invocation to the devas to bear witness and to rejoice with us on this auspicious day of taking the Bodhisattva vow ceremony. This verse below is simplified version. They just chant the four basic vows as follows. This one is drafted by, I think, non-Mahayana. They try to simplify it. But anyway, I will read it to you. Suffering beings are numberless. I vow to liberate them all. So this is simplified version. Attachment or suffering is inexhaustible. I vow to sever them all. Dharma doors to truth are numberless. I vow to master them all. The way to perfection leading to supreme enlightenment is very obvious. I vow to realize them all. You can modify the language of this vow so that they speak out deep. They speak your deepest dedication. That's the reason why your faith has to be very strong. Your resolve also has to be very strong. Then you can repeat them every time you sit in meditation to direct and dedicate your practice. Alternatively, you don't have to really do that. But instead, you can maybe on a daily basis, once a week, reflect on it, contemplate on it, and go deep into it to understand it. Then developing the understanding until it become a part of you, so that even without the notes, you are more or less, you can more or less understand or know what this thing is. And these are the things you need to cultivate. You need to develop the understanding and design your vows. And when it has become a part of your nature, Then when you come to this world, whether you have to come or you choose to come, even when there is no more sasana, Buddha sasana within the world, this understanding that you have developed through your vows can still enable you to walk the path of Dhamma to cultivate. And you will still develop the understanding and you will not be heedless or get lost like normal living beings. Without the Buddha sasana, most living beings, when they come, they really suffer because they will become heedless. And without the Buddha Dharma, it's very difficult to awaken or even to even have the understanding of life. Okay, now we shall turn to the next page on the taking of the Bodhisattva vows. This is the one that you have to develop the understanding. Since I still have some time, I will first go through them with you all before you take the vow. Okay, maybe we stop here, taking on the Bodhisattva vow. I will mark this page. Then we can have our 45 minutes of awareness-based meditation. Okay, I will mark this page. Okay, we are at page 122. I will off the light so that you all can have your 45 minutes of awareness-based meditation. Okay, just relax body and mind. Completely relax. Then let things be. Don't think, don't try to know, don't do anything, just maintain awareness. The first support is relax body and mind completely, be at ease. The second support is just silent everything and maintain awareness. The moment you are without thought, the awareness is there, you don't have to look for it. You just silent and maintain that nature's awareness. When thought arise, let it arise. Don't follow. Yeah, that is the condition arising aspect, not your true mind. Then you just aware, finish. Aware, finish. Just let things be. And all this will stabilize. Then the third support is maintain this awareness for as long as you can until it stabilizes. Then finally, you trust your nature to do the meditation. No more thought process involved. Just relax as deep as you can and maintain awareness. And when the awareness stabilizes, use it to meditate. Use it to observe the silent mind. The silent mind is your true mind, your meditative mind. And this is the mind that can understand things, that can awaken, that can insight into the norm, that can give rise to wisdom. And this is the real meditation. So I will set the alarm now, and you can continue with your awareness-based meditation. It will be for 45 minutes. Taking of the Bodhisattva vows. We will continue for another maybe 10 or 12 minutes. Then we will stop for session 2. Taking of the Bodhisattva vows. As is traditional, you may seek a Buddhist center or temple or a shrine to take the Bodhisattva vows in the presence of a teacher. I think this one we have gone through. So this one we have gone through. One must make strong aspiration to take this Bodhisattva vow with determined faith and understanding, sincerity in front of the Buddha or great Bodhisattvas who had gone forth before us. So this one can be done in a way place or even in your house where you have an altar. You can do it. Then you can start by reciting the homage to all these Buddhas and Bodhisattvas. So what we do is we tie up all the Buddhas and Sakyamuni Buddha followed by all the great beings that we are familiar with, that we have affinity with, to do the salutation. So here I mentioned, today we are going to do it in front of all the Buddhas, Bodhisattvas, and we shall start by paying respect to them. We are chanting their four hao as follows. Namo Bhinsu Si Chia Moni Pho. So this one is homage to the Sakyamuni Buddha. So we recite three times. Then Namo Kuan Sing Pusa. Homage to the Kuan Yin Bodhisattva. Or Avalokiteshvara Vera Bodhisattva. Then Namo Amitabha. Homage to the Amitabha Buddha. Then homage to the beloved Maitreya Buddha. Also, we recite three times. Then Namo Pusien Pusa is homage to the Pusien Bodhisattva. Or Samantara Bhadra Bodhisattva. Then homage to the all the Buddhas and Bodhisattva or Pusa. So after the salutation, I explain, these are the great Buddhas and Bodhisattvas that we have to cultivate a lot of affinity with, because we need your support to walk this path successfully. I always say we need to seek their nature's blessing, protection and guidance. So these three things are very important. Their blessings, their protection. Protection is for the form and mind, and their guidance is about the cultivation and the practices. And through this sincere affinity, we will know how to develop the request for their sincere protection, guidance, and blessing. The protection is for form and mind only, and this understanding is very important, because when we come to this existential world, we have a physical body and a mind. Or the consciousness trapped inside the physical body. So combining them together, this is the five aggregates of form and mind. This form and mind, the so-called segmented life or living being in this life, is a human being. So this form and mind or this human being or living being is very fragile. It can easily be destroyed, damaged, or maybe dispersed. And when this vehicle is gone, you cannot cultivate, you cannot perfect yourself, and you cannot do what you want to do anymore. So that's the reason why you need to seek your protection. It's protection from all these great beings' nature. They are all clearly stated inside the Bodhisattva vows note. Later on, we will go through them. Making of special aspiration to walk the Bodhisattva way. This one we have gone through, but I will just read too quickly. This is very important, and what we are aspiring here is also very unique. He said, by the power of whatever blessings and wholesomeness that this nature of mine had cultivated from the distant past till now, may it arise as the causes and condition for this nature of mind to have the following right Dhamma understanding, life after life, whenever it chooses to come or have to come in the form of a form of mind. So these right views are very important, right Dhamma understanding. First is right view with regards to the law of karma, law of dependent origination or mind, or the dwelling citta niyama. And finally is the four number 12 or Dhamma Niyama, is the law of truth. Then the second right view is to understand the two aspects of the five aggregates of form and mind clearly. They are the direct seeing to realize that they are all condition arising entity, causal phenomenon, hence impermanent, leading to suffering, not me, non-self, and empty. That is, this so-called human being, the five aggregate of form and mind, It's just a karmically conditioned vehicle and tool for us to come to this existential world to develop the cultivation and experience all of the beauty and wonders of life. So use it with wisdom to arise the right thought, right speech, and right action to be a blessing to all and not to be deluded by it. To constantly recite with understanding the following Dhamma profoundly. Rupang anicchang, rupang anatta, vedana anicchang, vedana anatta, sanya anicchang, sanya anatta, sankara anicchang, sankara anatta, vijnanam anicchang, vijnanam anatta. Then the final summary. Sabbe sankara anicchang, sabbe sankara dukkang, and finally sabbe dhamma anatta. Then I explain. No, the form and mind here refers to your karmically conditioned form and mind. This is your segmented life's vehicle. Every life you come to this existential world, you will have this form and mind, which is for that segment of your life. Like this segment of my life, my form and mind is this one, which you all call gratitude. But this one is not me. Do you understand? This one is karmically conditional. That's why it's condition arising, dependent originating. It's not a permanent, unchanging entity. Hence, it's impermanent. It's never a permanent, unchanging entity where I can hold on to, cling on to, and say, this is me, this is I, and therefore all this can be mine. There is no such thing. That's why later on in the vow, I have actually incorporated all this understanding for you all. That's why it is very important that this life after life, you must come with all this understanding. Then you will become beautiful. You will have, you will not have any more problem. Then whether there is sasana or no sasana, you are still beautiful. You can understand. You can still understand and walk the path of Dhamma. But this nature of mind had done so, and it had gone through long periods of cultivation and perfection. That's the reason why this time, when I look back, no wonder it's so wonderful. No wonder this form of mind can understand so many things. Like I used to tell you all, a lot of my understanding that I had shared with you all this time, I didn't learn them this time. Then where did it come from? It must have come from my past cultivation. Also, how come the moment I was born into this world, I don't have to go through suffering to seek truth or the Buddha Dharma? When condition arise, this form and mind just seek automatically. Then when it starts to seek, it will know how to filter. It will also know how to wait for appropriate causes and condition and the right timing to do things. That's the reason why I remember all of a sudden in 1971, at the age of 16, the year when I was in Form 5, this form and mind started to seek or search. The following year, the moment I came across the Four Noble Truths, that's it, and no more searching or seeking. This nature recognized the truth straight away, no more doubt. No need to search anymore, this is the real one. For nobody can do it unless he is a real Samasambuddha. Because I reflected, 2,600 years ago, after his enlightenment, the Buddha, Sakyamuni Buddha, can come out with this teaching. No one in this universe can summarize all of his understanding into just Four Noble Truths, which is so beautiful, so simple, and yet so concise. This nature must have contemplated for a very long period of time. maybe for countless eons and eons of light. That's why it is possible to have such understanding. Then the moment, sorry, that's why it is possible to have this understanding the moment it sees this light of truth. It knew straight away. Nobody in this universe can actually summarize all of this understanding in this way. This nature even tells itself, even if I had developed that type of enlightenment, if without the Buddha's teaching or the sasana, I still cannot summarize it into just four noble truths and share it with the world. That's why whoever he is, he has to be the real one. This nature recognizes it straight away because of all those vows that this nature had cultivated. This is a very auspicious and rare occasion where we can encounter and develop all this understanding. That's the reason why you all must have the faith and very strong resolve to make sure this understanding goes with you all life after life. Okay, now I will go through it quickly, so that we can all take the vow together. First is to have right view with regards to law of karma, karma niyama, law of dependent origination or the dwelling or the paticca-samuppada, which is part of citta niyama or law of the mind. And thirdly is right view with regards to the four noble truths as taught by Lord Buddha, dhamma niyama. And the four noble truths are like the secret of life, all of life, mundane and supramundane. They are all summarized there. That's the reason why I said nobody in this world or this universe can do it unless he is the real one, the Sammasambuddha. Then the next part is to understand the two aspects of the five aggregates of form and mind. Clearly, we are the direct seeing. To realize that they are all conditioned arising entity and causal phenomena, hence they are all impermanent, leading to suffering, not me, not self, and empty. This so-called five aggregates of form and mind, the living being. It's just a karmically conditioned vehicle and tool for us to come to this existential world. To develop the cultivation and experience all of the beauty and wonders of life. So use it with wisdom to arise the right thought, right speech, and right action to be a blessing to all and not to be deluded by it. Then after that, to constantly recite with understanding the following profound essential Dhamma, which we have gone through, Rupang, Anicjang, etc. All this we can chant later to develop the understanding that all of these five aggregates of form and mind, Rupa, Vedana, Sanya, Sangra, Vinyana, they are all impermanent, non-self and empty. In Pali, it's Sabbe Sankara Anicjang, Sabbe Sankara Dukkang, and Sabbe Dhamma Anatta. When you have cultivated and developed the deep penetrative understanding, then every of this chanting will be so meaningful and so penetrative. We have to develop the cultivation until that level. Then only can we carry it out, carry it with us life after life, the understanding. That's the reason why I always tell you all, this life presents the best window of opportunity because the Buddha Sasana is still here. And you can develop a lot of wholesomeness and a lot of parami and a lot of virtue from it. When you have a lot of merits, virtue, and parami, you can invoke power of merits for causes and conditions for this understanding to arise. That's the reason why these vows are very important and very powerful. Okay, now you can turn to the next page. Having developed the above right view, this nature of my vow, to always keep the following three sets of pure precepts following the advice of all Sammasambuddha. So this one we have also gone through. Anyway, I just read through it. Note, these three sets of pure precepts are very important. They are basically the advice of all Buddhas, but the three advice is presented in a slightly modified way. The first set of pure result is to undertake the training rule to avoid all evil and to understand clearly What constitutes evil? That is, the three evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion are the roots of all evil. So this is the first pure precept to avoid all evil. So that's the reason why you have to reflect and contemplate on them until you understand them clearly. Otherwise, you cannot cultivate. How to avoid evil when you don't even know what constitutes evil? That's why the teaching is on. You have to understand what constitutes evil. Don't just mumble or verbalize greed, hatred, and delusion. It has no meaning unless you understand. When you don't understand them, it doesn't have any meaning. That's why you have to reflect, contemplate, and go deep into it and look into life. Because there are a lot of subtle greed, subtle delusion that comes through the back door via the mundane mind to deceive you. Then the second set of pure precept is you undertake the training rule to cultivate all virtues and blessings leading to the perfection of them all. So this is more in-depth cultivation as opposed to the usual advice, cultivate whatever goodness or wholesomeness when there is condition. So here you not only cultivate all virtue and blessing, you have to perfect them all, leading to the perfection of them all. Then the last or the third pure precept is to undertake the training rule to cultivate all wisdom and help liberate and take across all sentient beings. So the last advice of the Buddha is normally just to purify your mind, yeah? And enlighten here and the now. So purification of mind is just very general. You need to cultivate all wisdom to help liberate and take across all sentient beings, means to fulfill the vow. So the three sets of pure precept of a bodhisattva is to fulfill your vow, your first basic vow. So the modified part of the second part, which is to liberate all sentient beings, because the Buddha's advice is just to avoid all evil, do good, and purify the mind. You have to cultivate wisdom first. But you do it because of the vow to help liberate and take across all sentient beings. That will drive you to walk the bodhisattva way while taking those vows. Then for the actual taking of the four basic vows of the Buddha, I have phrased it for you in a very nicely arranged manner. This one, maybe afterwards we will go through it. The first part, which is just to plant the seed of Bodhi via reciting all this. I think we stop here. It's already 5 o'clock. I will mark this page so that the next session we can finish it. Okay, we are at page 127. So now you continue your second session, meditation reporting, followed by whatever question you may have, Dhamma question, and also whatever sharing.
Amitabha, Brother Teo, Yui, and Mrs. Teo, so long didn't see her, miss her a lot. Actually, not much, but questions that I need to ask. Brother Chiu.
Yeah, no problem. Yeah.
This one is when perception is perception. Perception of form is consciousness.
Yes.
Non perception
is wisdom.
Yes. And this one, I noticed that. Actually, when you go into sati, the form doesn't seem to be in physical.
Yes.
It's more on the mental factors.
Yeah. Because right? That one is mental. Yeah.
Sanya mental.
Is mental.
And because of the non-grasping nature of this mind, that actually you can see things as it is in a natural form.
Yeah, that is the explanation part. The word.
Yeah. Can Brother Chiu, because when I in one of the meditation,
yeah,
It showed me that actually how the perception of a lotus being formed.
Oh, okay.
It's like vertical, horizontals, and the different lights that
it comes
in a natural way, because this one closely linked to the four supports and the four foundation of mindfulness. Okay. So remember one time I told Brother Teo about sitting in totality?
Yeah.
Because the sitting in totality actually is the understanding arises from my mind. Is actually Master Sun Yan is talking about just meditate. So I took that as a retreat. I did that. And I without understanding, actually I do it like I sit in the totality in a relaxed form. And I don't seem to have any expectation of my meditations. I that time I still don't know what that is awareness. Okay, so I just like then this thing when I start to do this, many things seems to happen. So then understanding arises. All right. So I find that my five hindrances slowly went off. So that's why I can I link to the four supports to stabilize this understanding. And slowly, slowly I find that the mindfulness that I understood earlier is actually very thought based. And when come to later on, as it's developed, it become a natural process. So when this natural process actually it got a lot of understanding, and when you you go through your experience, you have the understandings. It arises by itself. And one time when I was doing the walking and walking meditation, after walking suddenly I feel quite long time like that walking. Then suddenly the hearing and the seeing simultaneously happen. But when I have a thought saying that, oh, this is seeing and hearing, I just have that thought. Suddenly another thought came, say, don't believe in perception.
So, okay,
I just leave it like that. So another, then only the lotus one came. But recently, the meditations becomes because it's now the mind doesn't go out. It doesn't go out and it's not, it not so concerned about the external sense or all these things. It straight away go in. Then it became, then I noticed that it seems to be like even you sometimes, because recently I attended the morning group's cultivation of the Chun Ti chanting
for
the pandemic. And there are a lot of instructions that you have to do the what. But because I have the understanding from Brother Teo about, because initially I catch up, this one is the five spiritual faculties first when I went to Long Po Anan place. Remember, I text Brother Teo and Brother Teo said you have to develop the five spiritual faculties from that. Okay, then now I can sense that if I go into that type of instructions, type of meditations, I will do concentrations. I will do concentration, and but I knew that it's not suitable for me. So I will go back to my old style, go back to awareness. And this awareness, it can actually show me if I got any impatience, because sometimes it's very long, you say, because especially when the 24 mantra chant into one mantra. It can understood, and it can, it has no grasping, then it can release.
Okay.
virtue, and I now going to reflect on this word that Bratu gave me, the perception side, I find that there is a deeper meaning in that.
Yes, much deeper, yeah. You want me to explain that sentence, the Surangama Sutta sentence, perception of form is consciousness, whereas its non-perception is wisdom. So that is the part you want me to elaborate on. Huh? Okay. Yeah. Okay. Thank you so much for your good question. Salute to you. Sorry. You see, when it comes to cultivation, a lot of people cannot really develop the understanding because the main issue is the lack of understanding of the two mind. What are the two mind? We have the mundane mind, the thinking mind, the conditioned arising mind. That one, every headless living being or normal human being, they use it a lot. They are very familiar with that, but they don't know that that is the mundane mind. They thought that is the only mind, that is the consciousness. And what does that mind do? That mind has the five aggregates. That mind always perceive. So perception, sanya aggregate, is an aggregate of that mundane mind. And whatever it perceives before it is enlightened, before it has the wisdom, is always delusion. That's why they call it deluded perception. Because without right view, whatever you perceive, there is the egoic mind behind. And the egoic mind behind will condition the three evil roots. That's why this Mahayana Sutta, or Surangama Sutta, the enlightened one, they will know. I remember about 30 years ago, the first time I read that sentence, it struck my nature so strongly. My nature was amazed that there is such a teaching. The perception of form is consciousness, whereas this non-perception is wisdom. It was so clear, so profound, so beautiful. Then my nature rejoiced. I said, how come there is such a teaching? I thought nobody understand. But when I saw it with my true mind, the silent mind, the nature, I knew what that thing is. But how many people understand? Surprisingly, the sutta has it. That's why that sutta has a story behind. It seems the Zen story is very famous, but very few people understand. The Zen story goes this way. He said there was a Zen master who had many students staying on an island. Then one day, one of the disciples was very excited. He had very good meditative experience. Then he thought he was enlightened. So he wrote a message to the master. He said, Master, Master, thank you so much. With deep respect and gratitude, I'd like to really thank you. I have awakened. I'm enlightened. I know what this thing is really. So he was very excited. He said, I'm coming over to see you soon. So the master was very like full of expectation that this student really understand. But I think the master also knew that it's not so easy. That's why the master said, okay, come, you can come. So the moment the student came, he was very excited, pay respect them, very courteously, sat aside and talked to the master. And the master said, oh, so I heard you have good progress and you already enlightened. The student said, yeah, humbly, I believe so. Then the teacher say, okay, what is that? He point to a table at the side. When the student replied, table, The master used that ruler, the Adam Zen ruler, and whacked the student. The student was very surprised. The student was very unhappy. Then the student said, "Master, why do you do this to me?" The master said, "Why? Are you angry? Are you not happy?" Then the student knew he was still agitated, can be disturbed. Then the master replied to him. He said, "You say you are enlightened. I point to that one. You still perceive it as a table. And say, you say you are enlightened. That's why he cannot wake. But he don't understand. He said, that is a table." Yeah. But to an enlightened being, the answer is different. Because you perceive form. That is basically consciousness, the mundane mind perceiving. The mundane mind that perceives that table or external form is a concept, is an idea. That's why perception of a form is your mundane consciousness. You become conscious of that. Whereas if you have silenced your mind, developed the awareness-based meditation, and you are just aware, that is the true mind, the unconditioned. The true mind got nothing, like Huineng, the poem. Originally, there was nothing. Where can the dust arise? Nothing means what? No word, no concept, the unconditioned. No aggregates of mind. That's why no duality, no this and no that. That's why that one is the direct seeing. Seeing things as they are without any words. That is the pure direct seeing. That's why when you have that type of seeing, it's just like the Zen analogy, Kan San, Bu Si San, where he sees things as they are without the perception. That's why the enlightened being uses the true mind to see. Like Huineng say, if you teach apart from the self nature or the true mind, then you are not teaching the true Dhamma. You are teaching thought-based Dhamma. Dhamma with marks, concept, idea, and all those things. So that profound nature of the understanding of the Surangama Sutta is very profound. Unless you are enlightened, you have realized that true mind, the silent mind, that you know what is the direct seeing. That's why when you develop the direct seeing, then you don't have the mundane seeing like a normal person. Unless you have reached the third stage, where you see everything as normal again. Because when you meet people who are still not enlightened, then he said there is a mountain. Yeah, mountain. Like when that disciple, let's say, he discussed with somebody who is not enlightened, not his master, he pointed to the table. He can answer the table, yes. But to the enlightened one, where you claim to be enlightened, you came and your teacher pointed to that one, and you say it's a table. Definitely he knows you are not enlightened. That's why he whacked you. So all this is not easy to comprehend unless you have realized the true mind, the silent mind. Your daily mindfulness is very stable. Then you can see things as they are without the concept, without the word, without the perception. That's why perception of form is consciousness. Whereas it's non-perception, where you don't perceive, that is the direct seeing. And that one, sitting as they are, that is wisdom. That's why that sentence is so profound. Perception of form is consciousness, and whereas it's non-perception is wisdom. That's the reason why the first time when I heard that, my nature rejoiced. And I said, there is such a teaching in the Mahayana Sutta, I remember it's from the Surangama Sutta, which page I cannot remember, but I saw that my nature was full of joy. So hopefully with this explanation, it can help people understand. So Miss Lee, salute to you for creating that condition. So when you cultivate, always remember, don't be too excited. Don't try to like find out what is this sentence. Why did Brother Teo say this? Why did the Surangama say this? Then try to use your Dhamma knowledge or logic to understand. No point. When you transform, when you really have the silent mind, the direct see, the stability of it, then when you don't use thought, you will understand. You will awaken. Yeah. So initially, maybe people who don't have the true understanding, they are like most Mahayana practitioners, they are very interested in finding the answer, like the flag. Yeah? The analogy of the wind and the flag. They try to understand through knowledge and try to explain through the knowledge as if they already had that wisdom or understanding. But unless you have the direct seeing, the awakening, you cannot understand. Because these are beyond mind, beyond thought, beyond the mundane mind. So all this, what I will advise is just cultivate. Don't try to know. When the time comes, when you are ready, all these sentences or all this sutra, they become clear to you immediately. The moment you heard, the moment you read, you understand. That's why a lot of cultivators do not have the understanding. I always share with the Yamita who are close to me. I say, you know what the Mahayana Sutta are for? They are for enlightened beings. Because they are sutras proclaimed and taught by enlightened great beings. That's why they are for enlightened beings. They are not for ordinary beings. But when you have developed the cultivation, then you will appreciate it. It becomes very beautiful. But when you read it as a storybook or a sutra, thinking that this is Dhamma, then you try to understand it using the thought, the mundane mind, then you are being caught, being trapped, where that is not the real understanding, the real teaching. That's why you have to silence your mind, transform and realize the true mind, like Huining. Start with no thought. Then develop the direct seeing, the awakening, and realize no mark. Then locate the gateway and finally transcend and go in and realize the true mind. When your mundane mind collapse, then you can be in the state of no dwelling, silent, inner awareness, without a center. That is the oneness nature. That is the true mind, shine forth. That one cannot dwell, cannot hold, cannot like the normal deluded living being, create egoic mind and all those things. So this is the penetrative understanding and advice that you should pay in mind. So when you cultivate, just do until very stable. Then one day, suddenly all this become clear to you. It's just like awareness for Miss Lee's case. When you understand what that is, after you have developed the understanding, then you know what that thing is. Then no more confusion, no more thought-based style description of sati or mindfulness. To be mindful is not to know, to focus and to concentrate. To be mindful is to silent without thought and just aware. That is what sati is. So when you understand that, you will know how to meditate. That's why sati is awareness before the knowing. Awareness is no perception. That's why there is no knowing. The moment you know, you are no longer aware. But that nature is so close. it can be aware and it can perceive it want to perceive because we live in a conditioned world. The mundane mind is needed to communicate, to explain, to share, to describe. So all these words, terminology, 文字 is needed for normal knowledge, normal understanding of science, technology, non-psychological thing, non-meditative thing, for discussion, for sharing and all those things, to explain things. You need words, you need 文字, concept, idea and all those things. So all this, unless you have gone through the cultivation and awaken, you cannot see and develop the understanding. But once you have control, all this become very clear. Okay, Miss Lee? Hope this help you. Yeah.
Thank you, Brother Teo. The first part, the internet actually cut off Brother Teo's voice.
Oh, is it?
I will re-listen again.
Yeah, you better re-listen again. Yeah, this was very important for a lot of cultivators.
This one perception, I think, is once you break, that means what I see is actually is it don't have grasping. Once you don't have the perception, and it the first part, I think it takes me longer for perception to go off.
Definitely, where the cultivation takes time. When your mindfulness has not stabilized, when you have not realized the true mind very clearly, you cannot actually have that type of wisdom or awakening to see and understand that sentence, perception of form is consciousness, whereas non-perception is wisdom. But that one cannot come. But more important is, like I say, when you cultivate, you just cultivate. Don't try to know. Be patient. When the time comes, all this will become clear. Otherwise, the danger is people try to relate it to Dhamma, knowledge and understanding. That's why when you cultivate, you don't try to have the ability to not perceive. Then it's totally thought-based again. Because you think perception of form is consciousness means you are not enlightened. Then everything also don't want to see, don't want to perceive. No, then how can you live life? My daughter want to share something.
Skill too, Miss Lee. Something to add. I think I've reflected on this sentence before. I think for me, what helped me was when I reflect upon perfection, perception of form, I start to ask my line of inquiry was more like, what am I perceiving? And then what do I do with what I perceive? For example, chair. What is a chair to me when I perceive a chair? Am I trying to see is a good chair or a bad chair? Is that what I'm trying to perceive? And then why do I need to know it's a chair? Is it for a mode of communication because I need to label this in order to talk to someone? Or am I trying to differentiate the different types of chair outside in the world? It's like that is a simple one, a neutral example, a chair. But when I start to give you more of both, like people, person, someone related to you, not related to you, politicians, and there a lot of perceptions will start to come in. Then that's when I get a deeper reflection of what I perceive, how I perceive, what I do with all the perception I create, and then why do I perceive all this in the first place? Then it starts to lead me deeper into how I build my beliefs. So maybe that will help you inquire and reflect. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.
Sadhu, sadhu. Maybe
sharing.
I will elaborate a little bit more on what my daughter shared, which is very important, because this is the part I was trying to explain to you all this time, but it's not easy. Now that there is condition, where my daughter bring it up, now I will explain the whole thing and tie it up. You remember in the early days when Krishnamurti shared, he said thought divide. How did thought divide? Through what? Through idea, through concept, through words, which is precisely through the mundane mind perception. That's why my daughter said, when you perceive something that is based on your individual views, opinion, conditioning, and belief system, and your memory, that's how you mold that perception. And when you create that, everyone is different. The English educated say it's a jack. Chinese educated, yizi. Yizi. A Malay student, krosi. Or whatever language is different. That's why all these words are very divisive and very dangerous, because you will argue, hey, this is not a chair, this is 椅子, ini kerusi, mengapa you cakap chair, apa tu chair? Then you argue on yourself. Then when it comes to person, it becomes worse. Then the raise everything up. Your perception of form is the external identity. And you divide through what? Skin color, age, and all those things, gender. Then it starts to divide. That's why perception of form is consciousness, which is the mundane mind's activity that creates conflict, division, that brings about suffering and misery and attachment, clinging. Grasping, where you cling to your views, your opinion, and your expression, the way you perceive things. That's why thing is just the way it is. No right, no wrong, no duality. All come because of perception. When you are not at that level of enlightenment, your perception is always deviant perception, wrong perception, egoic, very personal type of condition perception. So perception can be deceiving and deluded when you don't have the understanding. So that sentence, perception of form is consciousness, whereas its non-perception is wisdom, is a very profound understanding. But when you cultivate, don't try to do like that. Brother Theo say, or the Buddha says, Surangamasu, perception of form is consciousness, I don't want to perceive, because I think I am enlightened. You are dead. You live in a mundane world, you have to perceive. Like I say, you talk to a person who is not enlightened, you go back to the conventional seeing, because you have already developed the understanding of both. But when you meet the enlightened being, when he speaks to you in abstract understanding of the direct seeing, you also can understand. That's how you fit in. Then the truth is, when you have gone beyond duality, means the mundane seeing and the enlightened seeing, there is suchness seeing. Suchness seeing is seeing things the way it is. How you interpret, not important. There is suchness. That is the truth. That is the way it is. So no argument. So that seeing, unless you have that silent mind, the stability of awareness, to every time, spacious awareness, you just aware, you need to perceive, you perceive. But most of the time, you are just aware. That's why most of the time, you don't think. Even you perceive, it's just that pure perception. You know what that thing is, finished. It's just for understanding, for communication, for the world. But it does not delude you, deceive you, condition you into grasping, clinging, affliction, and all those things. So these are very good conditions. What we discussed today from Ms. Lee and my daughter sharing, and when I add in, now it becomes very clear. The whole thing is become like very clear, the whole spectrum of cultivation. So don't try to be in the state of non-perception. But when you go through those phases, you will know, because there is nothing inside that. Where you see things as they are, that thing is beyond word, beyond description. It's just like the baby, newborn baby. No word, nothing. That's why they see that reality, seeing things as they are, before the perception. And there is a direct see. That's why the enlightened one, they will know. Beyond when they don't perceive, they see truth, they see reality. That's why the non-perception of form is when you have the direct seeing, you are different. Because that itself is wisdom. Where you see things as they are, without reality, without word, without concept. And that is suchness seeing, the direct seeing. And that is what enlightenment is all about. So this is beautiful. Miss Lee, now back to you.
Thank you very much, Pratio.
Yeah.
Yes. It's, I think I got the got to go to further contemplate on this.
You will have to be patient, Miss Lee. You know what awareness is, but you have to stabilize it until one day when your nature really sees. Then that one is penetrative and different again. That one, without words, it understands itself. Then when you read the word again, wow, there is so much joy. But that penetrative understanding, it will just appear. Like just now you were trying to describe, not easy. Then from the way you start and you express, that's why I say, this is the description part, means you haven't developed the awakening yet. That final awakening of perception of form is consciousness, whereas this non-perception is wisdom. But it's good that you ask that question, because you actually wanted to penetrate already. You wanted to understand all this already, but you don't know how to go in. Then you try your way, you think by sitting the what you attended that. I don't know what you call. They call it a silent illumination, a sit in totality. You use the word. Whatever word you use is up to you. It's not the meditative sitting. It's how your mind transforms. Because when you go through all those words and concepts that they teach you, you think you sit in totality, means your mind is at a different level. That one is not important. To me, is Zheng Yan Pastor, he called it the Fakusai, he called it silent illumination. You must know how to relax and maintain awareness. Awareness is the illumination. Silent is without thought. Awareness is the same. But when you to develop that type of meditation, like we call it the awareness-based meditation, is to stabilize the awareness for you to cultivate. To awaken, to develop the direct see. So after that, use it. Stabilize your daily mindfulness and use it to cultivate the four foundations of mindfulness. The daily mindfulness, sati sampajana, mindfulness and clear comprehension. Then silence your mind throughout the day. Develop the religious routine. And one day, all of a sudden, you realize you are just aware without thought. Aware, perceive, aware, perceive, or most of the time, aware, silent. That's a specific phenomenal awareness or silent, spacious awareness without a center. All this will appear, it will happen. And then during that time, you will understand the Surangama Sutta's sentence. It becomes very clear to you. Then you know the delusion. So at least my doctor, from the contemplative understanding, he knows this is delusion. But she needs to stabilize her sati too before she can fully penetrate. But for her, it will be faster when she develops the stability of mindfulness and awareness. And when she moves into that cultivation, because of the contemplative wisdom and the understanding, that she analyzes things Actually, the analysis is investigative. It's Dhamma investigation. It's not using the thought to continuously proliferate. He used the word analysis in a different manner. It's to investigate through understanding. That's why she used the word, I want to understand what is perception. That is a big difference.
Mm.
If you want to understand what is perception, means you got the thing right already. You know how perception create all the division, everything already. That's why once I explain, she will understand more. And she can go in. Yeah. That's why she can start to explain to you how she went through the stages of understanding. When she contemplate and reflect on all this, she starts to develop the inquiry. We call it the inquiry. What is perception of? So when you inquire in that way, you are investigating. You are not just thinking. Understand? When you are just thinking, you don't have something to drive you. He wants to understand what is perception. That's why that is not thinking. That is investigative. That is contemplating. I want to understand what is thought. Why Brother Theo say thought divide? Why Krishnamurti describe all these things? Thought is egoic. Thought is limited. I want to investigate. I want to understand. I want to inquire. And then that mind develop the contemplative mind that it investigate. It understand. It's not lost in thought anymore. It become very focused, very serious. Then the thinking become very clear. It's just like clear thinking. Clear thinking. The clear thinking is a type of awareness.
Yeah, correct.
Although most of the time there is a movement of thought, understand? But that movement is slow. If we call it what they call, when you are creative, you have the creative mind. The creativity when it arises is a thought, but it's a creative thinking, understand? Creative in the sense that it's not from the memory. It's from an understanding, it's surface, understand? That's why it's called creative thinking. Like the musician, they want to come out with new music, very special music, so that people can really see the difference and experience. That's why these talented musicians and talented people, they have to have a very conducive environment, or we call it the creative atmosphere or environment, for them to be in that state of creativity to arrive. Then all of a sudden, they will understand, oh, this is it. Yeah, their creative inquiry develop their understanding. Then sometimes it's like from nature, they saw something. Then they can come up with a very beautiful description of what that thing is. But they are in that state of creativity. And this is all part of second turning, contemplative wisdom, inquiry. Reflection, contemplation is not just thinking. Thinking is heedless, without direction, lost in thought. Whereas creative thinking is a focus, awareness thinking, which is very different. It's driven by inquiry. I want to know what perception is. I want to understand what the Buddha meant by suffering, the 8 condition behind suffering. So all this is inquiry, the 5 aggregate of form and mind. Why did the Buddha say this? To understand, I need to know what is this 5 aggregate that I can put to test. And these are all inquiry. So you inquire. Why did the Buddha say Rupang, Vedana, Sanya, Sankara, and Vijnana? Are the 5 aggregate? You inquire. You don't believe, understand? Rupang, what is Rupang? First aspect, that's why I came up with all this understanding. I saw first aspect as a human being. Then we have the consciousness trapped inside the other 4 aggregate. Then the second aspect is the mental form that went in. How did I know? Because I saw perception. I saw how the external form entered the mind and how the 5 aggregate manifest. That's why the dwelling, the Paticca Samuddaya, but the instantaneous one, I can understand. People cannot understand. Because I saw all this. I understood all this. Then my nature, can have the understanding beyond from the past. He has developed them. And this line, nobody teach me this five aggregate of form and mind, the two aspects. You can check all the book. Nobody write this way. Nobody even can explain what this thing is. They have the words, Rupa Vedana Sanya Sankara Vijnana. But it's not easy. So hopefully you all listen to this again. Then this day for you, I think it's very useful because you are at the beginning of going into all this understanding, which is very useful for you. You listen to all this, you will become different again, and you will penetrate faster. Then when you stabilize your sati, your mindfulness, don't be too eager to progress or to know, because the stability of mindfulness is very important, the awareness.
Yes.
From the former sitting, come out into daily life until throughout the day you are aware. Then this directs the universe space. Yeah, you continue.
Yes, Raju, Raju.
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you very much, Raju. This only this part I need to reflect again. So I
Manyan. Okay.
Yeah, Manyan. Maybe I want to ask question. I just want to understand just your explanation to Miss Lee on the perception of form is consciousness.
Yes.
Yeah. Not only applicable to form, right? That means how we perceive someone, like if that someone is like, how we perceive, like we perceive it as a green person or an angry person, that is also a perception, right? That if we don't perceive it as such, then maybe then we won't get angry ourselves and then we won't suffer. Is it also applicable to this? I felt it is, I'm not sure. So
let my daughter explain to you when she is good at this.
Thanks.
Hi, Sister Manyan. Skill 2 also. I want to try this one. I raised my hand with my dad. So, I tend to agree with what you say. My understanding of why I agree is that the second aspect of form, because when you say perceive something, apart from objects, nouns, they are also, like you said, for example, when you perceive the person additionally, you add on greed. So all these are actually the second aspect of form. So the first aspect of form is all the external form that we see. But when we internalize, it becomes thought. Yeah. All our thoughts are a kind of form. It's the second aspect of form. So
mental form.
I agree that all these are also perception of form. But what we're perceiving now is our representation of the outside world, our beliefs, our thought. Yeah.
And that is the mantra.
Never mind.
Thank you.
Yeah, very good. Sadhu.
So
you understand what she's trying to tell you. The first aspect of form is the gross form, the external form. But when you try to label a person through the mental description, basically when you perceive that person's personality, this person is a violent person. This person is a very timid person. This person has this characteristic of property. And all these are all the mental form, understand? No? Mental form is the second aspect when you put in the content of consciousness. Means the content of consciousness means how you actually input them through your views, opinion, and conditioning. So these are mental aggregates that arise, whereas the physical form is the external form before you go and deliver all the segregation or division, like the physical body, where you perceive it as a form, a human being, then you look at the physical, then it starts to divide, whether the skin color separate them, or the age group separate them, or the gender, or this thing. So this is basic division created by form. From the first gross form, you go into the division of it through your various description. Means when you attach to form, he become like that. But when you see beyond form, that is the next level. If the human being or living being, if you see beyond form, you don't allow the form to deceive you and create a segregation or separation or division, then what do you see? No more gender, isn't it? No more race, no more identification with the form. Then human beings become different, more similarity, less division. Then what you have is a mind. You also have a mind, consciousness, no gender, nothing, no old, no young, nothing. Then after that, you go deeper. You realize after talking to that person, he has his views, opinion, conditioning, belief system. There it divides again at the mind level. It divides again. So when you try to understand perception, you can go in deeper and deeper. Then until you have the direct seeing, you can see beyond form, beyond the mundane mind. Then what do you see? You realize every living being has the same nature, which is neither the physical form nor the mind. That's why you see beyond thought, beyond mind, beyond form and mind. Then you see truth, you see reality. That is his nature. And his nature is all nature. That's how the whole cultivation evolves. And finally, you come to realize that. Then everything just falls into place. That's why I teach you in the early days. You have to see, learn to see form, the unreality of form. Then you can see beyond form. If you cannot see form and the unreality of form through the Dhamma, then you cannot penetrate form. You cannot see beyond form. Means form will continue to have power over you, deceive you, delude you, and condition you to grasp and cling and give rise to suffering. Then mind is the same. You have to learn to see mind. The unreality of mind means the universal characteristic. Then see beyond mind. Unless you penetrate all this Dhamma, you can never understand the unconditioned, the ultimate, the true mind, the silent mind, the unconditioned, the direct seeing. So all this is after you have penetrated the form, then you have penetrated the thought, the mind, the mundane mind, then you realize that nature. So the sequence of cultivation is the same. All that I have taught you, they are all there. So now you see the connection. Just from understanding perception, starting with the inquiry that my daughter inquired. He wants to know what is perception. And from there, the answer all come out. Then the whole of the cultivation also surfaced. Let my daughter continue.
The analogy actually hasn't ended. That perception of a person is greedy, right? Actually, if you continue to look at why we have that perception, why we thought it was greedy, maybe it was at one point of in time that person did something. That doesn't mean that today, at this point, this moment, that person is still a greedy person. Might have changed, you never know. So what all this, the replica of the world I created in my mind is only based on a point of time of what I thought. And it can change. So why do I have that perception? Why do I want to keep all these labels and use it to think how to make decisions in the future? So then I start to see, what am I using my perception for? What am I forming this person is greedy? Why do I want to save this in my mind for? Then I start to understand, the perception, my perception of form, what I want to, how I want to perceive, I can really make a conscious effort. Then apart from that also, when I look at a person, why do I perceive this way? When doctors look at a body, they see different things. Medically, they do not see everybody as different. They probably see all the same anatomy. They only diagnose different physiology conditions. Then it's like, it's how we program. So then I really start to question, why do I form this kind of perception of all these forms in my mind? So hopefully this also helps.
So all these are very useful sharing. That's why my daughter bring out another part of the Dhamma, which is very useful. You see, when you inquire about what is perception and how it leads you to all this, then you start to create more and more division. So that's why Krishnamurti say, when you see the limitation of thought, how thought divide and how thought create through words to create more and more division that leads to argument, conflict, war and everything, then why do you use thought to resolve psychological things? You cannot, because thought being egoic has the ego roots and has all these problems. It divides. So if you look at the Surangama Sutta, then you will understand perception of form is consciousness. So you look at the word consciousness. Consciousness is thought, basically. Pure awareness and its content is thought. There is a fire area of form and mind. So thought divine, the limitation of thought. So thought has its place in the world, in the conditioned world. But when it comes to spiritual understanding, when it comes to psychological thing, you cannot use thought. There is the wisdom. That's why the Surangama Sutta says, whereas its non-perception is wisdom. To have wisdom, you must have the direct seeing not to perceive with consciousness. Then all the division gone. You understand? All the limitation gone. But like the Heart Sutta say, when you understand all this, that thought is unreal, form is unreal, then all this become clear. You can see beyond form, beyond thought, without being deluded by it. That is wisdom. So to see beyond form, beyond thought, is to see things as they are, the reality. That's why you will not use thought to meditate anymore. Where you see clearly, it divide and create all this nonsense. It doesn't bring about solution. But thought has its place to live life, to arise right thought. To remember your name, your address, your bank account number, your signature, all this. To communicate, to express, to study science, technology, AI. Yeah, you need thought. So it has its place. That is what Dhamma is all about. Through understanding, you will know the purpose of perception. To arise the right thought. To arise the right perception which is not deluded. Which does not create division. We don't have the evil roots. So all this was singing, and it's a big topic, really. Because if you start to do it without understanding, what will happen is it becomes analysis. Then you will analyze, ayo, this person, why is he like that? Why can't he change? All this is your views, your opinion. Your expression, your perception, the way you see things and all that is relative, conventional truth, not ultimate truth. There is no such thing as why. Thing is just the way it is when you have the wisdom through the direct seeing. You see things very clearly. That everything that arises, there are causes and conditions. That's why suchness, true suchness, seeing things as they are. Thing is just the way it are. It is. No right, no wrong. Everything is just the way it is. So this is the ultimate understanding, and the full picture now came into the inquiry and the understanding so that you can see it clearly from another approach, which is the inquiry from the Surangama Sutta. Perception of form is consciousness. So my daughter start correctly, he said, I want to understand what is perception. And then from there, he can also penetrate, like what Krishnamurti penetrate, how thought divide, how thought is limited, and how thought is egoic, and how all the negative perception, no use. Why I want to know why he is like that, why she is like that? No use. Because all this will lead to more and more analysis, and it's not going to give you answer. more views, more opinion, more argument, more conflict. But when I see him or her the way he is, with the direct seeing, without the description and the division, if I don't perceive him, means I have an open mind. I observe. Then I know he's the way he is. With delusion, he do deluded thing. With anger, emotion, he do angry thing, emotional thing. With fear, he become insecure. He has worry, he has anxiety. And then I realize people are just the way they are. The condition behind condition them into what they are. Because they are at the mundane mind level. They use the thought process, which is egoic. They create their own wrong thought, their own suffering, their own attachment, their own delusion. And then I saw clearly. That's why I knew what is form, the limitation of form, then how thought divide, form divide, then how to see beyond form. If I want to see beyond form is, I must see the unreality of form. Where form is dependent, originating, condition arising, cause of phenomenon. No reality, come and go, come and go. No consciousness, how can it be me? So all this understanding is in the teaching. Then when I see clearly that form is unreal because it's impermanent, if I attach and cling, it will lead to suffering. And because it's impermanent, it's not a permanent unchanging entity, it cannot be me, it cannot be I. That's why the egoic mind is rooted out. Then when I can see the unreality of form, I can use the direct seeing to see beyond form. Then if I don't perceive anything at form level, I don't divide, I don't create race, I don't create gender, I don't create age, I got so much less headache or argument and conflict. I become peaceful. They are just the way they are. They have a form because condition is like that. Things will be like that. Through coming, condition. Okay. Then the understanding free me from all this analysis and problem. Then I straight away leave life because I know thought has its place. So I use thought when I need to, when I need to analyze, when I need to study, but not for psychological thing, not to awaken. Because with thought, I am limited by thought. How can thought go beyond thought? To understand things that are beyond thought. Beyond thought means beyond the external form, where you perceive thought or form through thought. So everything is at the mundane mind level, where I can return everything back to the true nature, which is the awareness, the true mind. Then I realize all this creation loses its power. Then from this creation, the five aggregate of form and mind come up, the universal characteristic come up, then the delusion grabs cling and conditions suffering. That's why the phenomenal world of form and consciousness created all this creation. And this is not real. That's why the Buddha said they are unreal. Anicchang dukkhang anatta. They have the universal characteristic. You grasp, you cling, you give meaning, you suffer. You become afflicted, you become miserable. So this is that very penetrative understanding. Huh? So let us rejoice. Huh? Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. And today the sharing is very good, very penetrating, approach from a different direction, but go back to the same teaching, the same Dhamma, so that you can understand clearly. Manjan, sadhu to you for creating the condition. So hopefully you understand now.
Very helpful.
Very helpful, yes. Must listen again. It's very penetrating and it's a very big topic. So sadhu to Miss Lee, Manjan and my daughter. So let us rejoice. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, let us do the sharing of Mary. We are 6:07 already. Huh?
Brother Teo, next week got class or not? Next week got class because you got injection.
Oh, right? Yeah, my vaccine. Thursday class cancer. Tuesday class on.
Sunday?
On Monday, do you want to cancel? Better cancel.
Because you are doing on Saturday, right?
Yeah, Saturday, yeah. I'm doing on Thursday. I let you know. Better.
All right.
So we will inform you. If we need to rest, we rest. is better. Nowadays, pandemic is very fierce. Almost all of SS2 also now like Subang last time. Last time I used to hear Subang area, this coffee shop, that coffee shop. Now they go to the SS2 coffee shop and all those things that haven't kena. Now almost everywhere SS2 also kena, 103 also kena. So be careful. Stay healthy, stay safe and take care. Then whatever precaution you have, not only take care of karma, take care of your own form of mind, your whatever that can help you to protect your loved one, yourself and others. Try to be helpful. When you are helpful, when you help others, others will help you. So be kind, be sincere, have good mind state, then have understanding.